Steve Dale back with you at 209 on WGN. Our guest is Linda Moran, the author of The Perks of Hospice, Stories of Love, Life, and Loss. And, you know, this may not be an upbeat conversation in some ways, but I will tell you it is something that so many of us are touched by in one way or another. Linda, welcome to WGN.
Thank you for having me and listening to this topic. It's one near and dear to me.
Yeah, clearly so. You wrote a book about it. Why did you write the book?
I've been keeping track of my husband's illnesses and all of his specialists and just making a record. And then it became cathartic for me to just go through and detail what happened and what we did and what could have been done. But then it became, how can I help others? One of the interviews I had done, the woman had said, well, I hope I'm not going to need that book for a long time. And I said, well, actually, you could use it right now because there's so many suggestions of things that you can prepare now so that when it does come to an emergency, terminal illness with a loved one, these are things that you can have on hand and ready so you're not frantically looking for doctor's numbers and lists of medications and who to call and where the numbers are. So it turned out pretty much as a love story for my husband and what we all had been through and the amazing gift that hospice gave us. Hospice, with their treatment, gave us two extra wedding anniversaries with a six-month diagnosis of, you know, terminal illness. So that was incredibly special.
So how was it? First off, my phone number, 312-981-7200, you can call or you can text. How was it that he was able to live longer and with quality of life as much as he could for that great period of time because of hospice?
It was interesting because when you hear the word hospice or when the doctor says, I'm going to refer you to hospice, you know, it's like a gut in the stomach. It's like, oh, dear. And they only do that if they fear you have 6 months or left before death. So at this point, my husband was dealing with nine different specialists. No one was talking to each other. Doctors were contradicting orders. Medications weren't working. It was just a mess. And he was so frustrated and so angry. And when our doctor suggested it, we'll try it. It can't be worse than what we're going through right now. And I don't think it was 24 hours before we had our first phone call saying, we're going to come and see if you qualify. And we did. And they asked everything. They wanted to know, you know, how are we as a couple? We were going to get a spiritual caregiver. I'd have a social worker to work with. We'd have a free meal for us once a week from one of the restaurants in town that we'd donate. They'd take care of our meds. They would do everything. They'd answer any questions we had. We had regular visits, and we went into hospice the year before the pandemic. So we spent a good chunk of our hospice time during the pandemic. But one of the things they did was protocol with hospice is they will look at your meds and take you off anything that is not directly related to what it is that is going to kill you. So they took off cholesterol meds. They took off eye drops. They took off several different kinds of blood pressure medicines, all of which were contraindicating each other. And within a month, my husband had his taste back, and he was able to eat again and was feeling better. And when they sensed that, or when I told them that he was having real anger issues at this whole thing, they got a short-term acting depression med for him. So it was like I had my husband back again, and we were able to talk and visit with friends and FaceTime. And anytime either of us was worried, we had someone to talk to right there at the other end of the phone. The two spiritual caregivers we had were so amazing because, you know, of course you're thinking, oh, this is the unknown and I don't know what to expect. And they're there talking you through it. Our main nurse case manager walked in the first day and said, Dean, you're not dying today. You have time, so let's talk about what you can do in the time that you have remaining, which turned out to be the 2 years.
You know, I just heard via text from a hospice nurse who thanked me for doing this segment. And frankly, I think personally, Linda, that hospice nurses, from my experience, are like angels on
earth. Oh, God, yes, they are. And they always have the answers. Anything that you would like to do, they will try to make happen. You want to go sit out in the sun? Okay, we'll get you the wheelchair. We'll get you out of there. We'll get a van to take you down to the lake. They'll make it happen. And to them, death is just the next step. And they're gentle. And I part of the book was I had to be able to say thank you to these people. The nurses were just incredible.
I understand. We'll talk more about this. I want to for you to offer some tips for people. If at some point in time you or a family member, close family member, needs to go through this, and go through this is not exactly the right way I'm guessing you would put it, because that's a negative way to put it. We'll talk about why I just said what I just said, all of that and more when we come back on WGN. It's now 2:15. And we're talking with Linda Moran, the author of the book, The Perks of Hospice. Linda, was hospice care what it turned out to really be? Very different than your preconceived notion. You do write about that in the book.
I know when we walked out of the doctor's office, we were just filled with doubts, and it's like, okay, what is this going to mean? Because it does have a negative connotation. But hospice is that option that we just never seem to hear about from our doctors or the hospital attendings or whatever, that when you are that close to death, you don't need to be hooked up to machines. You don't need to be, you know, going through an endless round of chemo. Hospice's whole purpose is to get you to be with family and provide comfort care. And do, you know, if you do not want to get another test, another ultrasound, and you don't need it, they're perfectly behind you. They will do whatever comfort care you need. We started out with a bag of just medicines for on down the road. So Dean never really needed morphine until probably within about a month of the end of his life. But it was there for us. And the meds were always taken care of by the nurses. I happened to run into a doctor in the elevator at the hospital one day when I was here for an appointment, and I said, would you mind if I ask you, how much training did you have in medical school on hospice care? And he just looked at me and he says, I don't think I had any. I'm not even sure I know what hospice does. Hmm. And I thought, oh, okay, that's something that needs to change. I know people become doctors because they want to fix people, but sometimes you can't fix anything anymore. And people don't understand that you can bring your child, your spouse, whomever, you can bring them home. Hospice can come in once, twice a week, however much is needed. They can provide house cleaning for you. They can provide the hospital bed, things like that. It was way more than what we had anticipated being. It really was, as your caller had said, it was a gift. And I called it the perks of hospice because that's not usually what we associate with the term hospice. But, you know, getting dinners, having someone come in to do your laundry and your cleaning and your sure. dishes and the dusting.
What? How long were you and Dean married?
Just shy of 45 years.
Did you have conversations when he was in hospice that you never otherwise would have had?
Yeah. We talked about how are we going to know that, you know, he's still out there kind of thing. What's going to happen? And we never talked about death that much, but we knew what each other's plans were. I knew what he wanted. He knew what I wanted afterwards. And I can remember one of our big conversations that I think relieved a lot of his mind was the idea that our bodies are energy. And if you know science, you know that energy doesn't disappear. It transmutes into something else. And that was really comforting to him, and it has been comforting to me for a long time, that we don't go away. The energy is out there, And I know a couple of the hospice LMAs were talking that they like to stay with the patient at the very end and have the family there because they know at the moment of death, they themselves have had that experience of just knowing when the spirit has kind of left the body or the energy has left the body.
Yes.
But mostly we talked about all the fun times and all the really stupid things we did.
Well, you know, what you just said is true because I've experienced that. At least for me, it's true. And it's a very sad but yet magical time. I'm not even sure what the right description is, but you felt bad because you weren't exactly there when he passed.
Well, I had fallen asleep.
Yeah.
I was holding him. I had one of our little quilts that had an owl on it that represented his mom coming back after she had died. And he was breathing so hard, and they were doing the morphine. And she said, you know, it's going to be soon. And I just had put my head down on his hands and had dozed. And she said, I think he's passed. I'm going to go get my stethoscope. And I was just appalled that I was not there for his last breath. His eyes were open. I kept wondering, I wonder what he saw at that moment. But when I said that to the nurse, she said, that's how he wanted it. That's how he chose to go. He heard you say, it's okay. I'll be okay. And then when you dozed off, he chose that time.
It's interesting because nurses that I've spoken to, hospice nurses, have told me that some people will wait until, say, a family member comes into town who's having a or they will wait until that family member leaves town or leaves the room, which
right.
is kind of what you described, which to me is fascinating. Some text here, there's one texter, I was going to ask you about this too. The difference between palliative care and hospice.
Yes. Palliative care is you need help. You're ill, not necessarily terminal, but you need long-term ongoing care. It can turn into hospice. It can act as hospice. But it's another step where there is still medical intervention, but it's only what's necessary. If they wanted to do an X-ray to check on things, that would be okay. But with actual hospice care, it's only what you need to be comfortable at that point. So with palliative care, it's more attentive. They can still do medical things. So it's kind of like an in-between stage. I have a friend who's a hospice volunteer. She has a client who is receiving palliative care through hospice. So, you know, she has cancer. They don't know what the end stage is going to look like, how long she's going to live, but she needs the care, and they're there for her. So it's an interesting area to explore, and if your listeners are interested, a book called The Safari Concept by an African doctor who was trained at Harvard, he has been developing palliative care programs to act as hospice in Africa, and it is fascinating to read, especially when he looks at what doctors do and don't know about palliative care and hospice.
I have a question here.
Don't
I'm
like
sorry.
To recommend it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, that's perfect. Perfect lead-in for our next texter question. Do you think sometimes doctors don't know when to stop and it's time to begin hospice?
Yeah, they don't want to admit that they can't fix it. I hesitate to say it's an ego problem, but I think that might be the case. But doctors, they've been trained to make the person better, send them home, get them better. And sometimes the patient and the family has to be very, very adamant about this is it. It stops now. No more. You're going to send us home, you know, send the social worker in, let us get started with hospice. A lot of times it has to come from the family. We were very fortunate with our primary care that she knew when it was time. She knew when he was so frustrated and so upset and doing so many different things that were contraindicated that it was time to look at something else. So we were very fortunate. We were also very fortunate that the care took 2 years. Most people go a couple of days to maybe a couple of weeks in hospice, sometimes even just a couple of hours, but they're at home. And that I would like for people to be able to get home sooner or to a respite house sooner so that the family can be together and they can talk stories and just remember. I had artwork there that my husband and I had done in respite house, and we were just watched really old 1960s TV shows. Man, they were bad. but we laughed a lot. And I think a friend of ours came up. Dean was not conscious a lot. And she came up and said, "Do you think he would mind if I sang to him?" And I said, "Oh, not at all." And she sang this incredibly beautiful Native American spiritual. It was just stunning. And my husband, he was just laser focused on her. Hmm. It was a cappella. It was just her voice, laser focused. And she nodded at him, took his hand, gave him a kiss on the head when she left. And he went to sleep. And 11 hours later, he was gone. And what I found really comforting was that his very last conscious thought was of music. And that's incredibly comforting for me. I'm sorry, I always get emotional when I talk about that.
How can you not? How are you doing?
I am approaching the 4-year anniversary. That'll be April 7th. On the one hand, it seems like forever, and then it seems like it hasn't been a week. I think I'm slowly turning the corner and deciding who I want to be. I just made a major move. We moved 23 times in times we were married. Dean was a good packer. We could move, set up house. Just took me, oh God, the move was horrible. It was getting rid of things, so many of which we had, art things we had done together, and then setting up and realizing I'm in a one-bedroom apartment. It's tiny. I have to get rid of more stuff. And that has been very traumatic. But I'm dealing with it, and I have a great circle of friends, and I'm learning to do new things. I'm doing more writing. I'm doing more art. So I miss him, and I always will.
Of course. But well, I thank you so, so much for sharing. Hopefully, writing this book will help other people. That's most important. The Perks of Hospice, Stories of Love, Life, and Loss. Linda Moran, thank you so much.